Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, we have with us Gabrielle Venna. Gabrielle is a life coach and business mentor with a background in counseling, psychology, and psychotherapy. She is a certified facilitator of several Access Consciousness special programs, including Being You and Joy of Business. Additionally, she is a certified practitioner in Reiki and integrative energy therapy. She studied psychology at UCLA and went on to receive her master's degree in counseling psychology from Ryokan College. A passionate advocate for self-discovery, Gabrielle draws upon 20 years of counseling, coaching, teaching, and such experience to facilitate classes and individual sessions, empowering her clients to become a powerhouse for change in their business, relationships, and lives. Thank you so much for joining us today, Gabrielle.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm so happy to be with you.
Yes, this is such a great subject because it was so funny when we were talking the other day in preparation for the show. One of the topics that we discussed we want to cover today, which we're still intending on doing so, is a couple of signs, the six signs that your career is making you bored. But before we do that, I want to kind of talk a little bit about what we discussed the other day, which is a universe-inflicted sabbatical. So can you tell us a little bit about how it was? How did you come to be a coach and business mentor? Was this always your life path, or did you have a universe-inflicted sabbatical happen?
Well, perhaps both. It wasn't until I didn't know what I wanted to do in high school. It was one of those things where it's like, oh my gosh, I have to go to college. And I have no idea what I want to do. However, what has always resonated for me since I was little was something in terms of empowering others to really be themselves and to be comfortable in their own skin and to not judge themselves. As I went through school and I decided to become a psychotherapist, it really was a natural progression of that. However, most people wouldn't start to be a psychotherapist and running the program they trained in and suddenly change tracks. That was indeed a universe-inflicted sabbatical. As we talked about, just about when the economy crashed, I don't even know how long ago it was now, but, 10 years or so or more, social services had their budgets get cut much sooner than the corporate world saw the effects. And I ended up getting laid off from the administrative part of my job, running the counseling programs. And I still had private clients that I saw at the center where I worked and got free room space. And when that occurred, I actually stopped and looked at it. And I just wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do. And it was so interesting. It wasn't a conscious choice. Like, I don't want to be a therapist anymore. But there was something that wasn't quite right. So I took, the 3/4 of my job really was running the counseling program. And then the other quarter is when I saw clients. And so I decided to take a break from the whole thing. And there were actually, it was quite a few years, probably 3 or 4 years before it really clicked for me that the general field was correct. The assisting people, the faith that people actually do know everything they need to know. It's just a matter of being guided to it or realizing that you do know, because so often we're taught we don't. It was a lot of exploration and working in marketing and a bunch of other fields that may not necessarily apply before I kind of started to settle in on coaching. And it took a couple more years before I found the tools of Access Consciousness and really got my groove and absolutely love what I do, and sort of like all the pieces fell into place.
So it's funny that you say that, like, you love what you do now, but at the time, you know, whatever it was, 8 or 10 years ago, when this universe inflicted sabbatical happened, did you feel frustrated or upset or like, gosh, what am I supposed to do? Or how or why did this happen? Did that go through your head? Or did you always have a pretty optimistic outlook on everything?
I tend, if you're going to look at things in that way, to be more of an optimist and to roll with the punches. I mean, certainly I have my days like anyone else, and I have my grumpy, cranky, the world is out to get me days. But actually now those are rarely days, and more often or not, just an hour or two, and then I'm over myself. You know, it was interesting. I didn't sense that something totally different at the time, and I actually loved my job and loved what I did and loved my clients and coworkers. It really was enriching and wonderful. Yet for the 3 months prior to the layoff, I started going into work, and every Monday, and of course it was Mondays, I feel agitated and dread, and like I didn't want to go in. Something just wasn't quite right. And I still can't say exactly what that was, but there was some inkling. And, you know, we're all, one of the things I talk to people about almost more than anything else is that we're all so much more aware than we're ever given credit for, whether you want to call it psychic or just, you know, aware, whatever it is. And so was I actually aware that there was this conflict going on, and they didn't actually want to lay me off, but it's just what made the most financial sense at the time. And so was I aware of that undercurrent going on for those few months while they were figuring out what to do? Perhaps. Was it, you know, just something about staying in that job that wouldn't have allowed me have as much personal growth and like adventure, the adventure of living, as I would have otherwise? You know, that's another piece that I think was at play.
So you're saying that there's a big part of us then that whether we realize it or not, it kind of intuits what's going on around us, and we sense it come sometimes even before we see or hear about it.
Very frequently before we see or hear about it. I mean, awareness, it's interesting because awareness, or, you know, intuition, whatever we want to call it, is laser fast. It's immediate. Our brains and thinking, that actually takes time. So we often have that intuitive awareness immediately, and it takes our brains a while to catch up. So, you know, it could be, you know, one of the things I noticed, and it happened to me today, I woke up and I was feeling a little just really tired and cranky, and I don't want to get out of bed. And then the word Monday went through my head, which is really funny because I work for myself. So I don't have that typical work week, and I actually don't mind Mondays one bit. I don't have that anymore. Yet there is this sort of undercurrent of that goes on Monday mornings that a lot of people pick up on and don't even realize they're aware of. And I've trained myself well enough now to be like, wow, you know, who does this belong to? Is this even mine, or am I just aware of something? I'm like, oh yeah, I'm aware. Never mind.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's one of the things I've had many coaches and mentors in my professional circles teach me is that, is this your energy or somebody else's? And I think especially for people who tend to err on the side of being more empathetic, we mistakenly express, or we think that certain emotions that might be negative could be our own, and then it can hinder our growth and our ability to be liberated human beings.
Absolutely. And, you know, it goes both ways. You can be aware of all the fun, joyous stuff too. It's just more frequently because it's uncomfortable, we tend to focus on what we'd call the more negative, you know, awarenesses. Yeah, absolutely. And when we can really learn to, as I put it, one of the tools I first give people is, you know, who does it belong to? And then if it isn't yours, just return to sender and let it go. You're not hurting anyone by returning it. They've already got it. You're just that getting it kind of awesome. Out of your field, so to speak.
Is just to let it go. Well, so that ties in perfectly to kind of our subject today is, how do you know, is it time to take that sabbatical, to take a break? You know, are you burned out creatively, emotionally? Is it related to something you're personally going through? Or is it related to maybe circumstances outside of you that you could do something to differentiate or to differ your circumstances? So what would be your advice to somebody out there who's thinking, gosh, you know, maybe I need to retrain, or maybe they're being forced into a retraining or taking a sabbatical, like you said, a universal universe inflicted sabbatical. How do you differentiate that and just being bored or unhappy? What's the difference between the two of like having choice versus reacting to it?
Well, we always have choice. And I love that you brought up choice and reaction. What I always talk to people about and try to stay really aware of myself is, you know, am I choosing here? Am I choosing from a space of wonder and question, or am I reactionary? Am I resisting or reacting or aligning and agreeing for that matter to something? So the greatest tool that I can give people, which sounds so simple, and it is, yet we don't use it to our full advantage, is the power of question. And really being the question when we look at these things. And what I mean by that is, if something's going on and you're feeling burned out or frustrated or just not enjoying yourself the way you either used to or would like to, say with your job or your career, is to start asking questions. And these are open-ended questions. And I put it really asking questions of the universe, but it's also just of ourselves to get awareness about what's really going on. So when it comes to something like that, one of the first questions you can ask is, what is this? And you're not looking for, and it's so different than how we're trained, because so many of us were trained to look for a cognitive answer, to look for some kind of a definition or something we can hold on to. These types of questions are very different. What we're looking for is awareness. And as I mentioned before, awareness is laser quick. Our minds take a little bit longer. So if something comes up, we're going to be like, what is it? Is this mine? Is this something I'm aware of outside of me? And then what you want to do is actually look for what is light or expansive. Anything that's light and expansive is true for you, even if it's not for anyone else. And anything that's alive for you or isn't true for you in this moment will have a sense of being contracted or heavy. So, for instance, if you're looking at, you know, gosh, do I need to change careers? I mean, that's a big question, but ask that question and then see what shows up. Do you get a sense of lightness? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, I want to play devil's advocate with you for a moment about this, because, for example, I deal with it all the time in my industry, being in recruitment. A lot of people, how do you differentiate fear versus contracting? Because I find that there might be something that could be in your highest and best good and could cause you to expand exponentially, but it might scare the crap out of you. So how do you differentiate between that and feeling like that fear and that contraction and separate the two so they're not...
Thank you for that. That's actually a really big distinction that you can make, because fear and excitement have a very similar physiological effect on the body. And again, you're going to want to go to questions, or if you're, you know, somebody that works with recruitment or works with people, ask that question, gosh, so is this fear or is it excitement? And see which one has more space to it. It's really kind of hard to lie to ourselves for too long. And yep, a lot of times it's actually excitement over the possibility, but it, like you said, it feels like terror. you know, going into something new and something that you may not be as familiar with or have, you know, all the tools in your tool belt yet to do or be, will often feel very uncomfortable. And what if, I mean, it's one of my favorite things is, I love to be uncomfortable. When I'm uncomfortable, I know that I'm constantly kind of walking into new territory and not just kind of circling in the comfortable and the familiar. And personally, I really, and for everyone I know, I'd like to see all of our lives become more fun, more exciting, more expansive, not just be stagnant. And so that's the question, fear or excitement, and, you know, everything you can, what do I want to say about that, with a fear or excitement, and just like, am I willing to actually embark on something a little bit uncomfortable here?
Speaking of uncomfortable, can I give you a perfect example that my business coach gave me years ago about this, that it is very disturbing. So I invite everybody to turn your radio, turn your iPhone off right now, or your internet, whatever you need, if you're not ready for something very uncomfortable, because I was furious at my business coach when he gave me this example about 5 years ago. So he and I were going through the same thing, and he was trying to teach me expansive versus contracting. And he said, you know, Jen, some people feel it in their heart, some people feel it in their gut. And he said, how you're designed is you're going to feel it in your heart. So he said, I want you to imagine a basket filled with puppies and kittens, like the cutest little things you've ever seen. So again, this is where I would highly recommend turning off the radio right now if you're not prepared for this, because it's pretty disturbing. And I was like, okay, great. He's like, where do you feel that? I was like, oh, I just feel like this flow upwards in my heart, and it just makes me smile and makes me happy. Again, I advise, this is your opportunity to turn off the radio. And then he said, I'd like you to imagine that basket of puppies and kittens getting run over by a car. And I was pissed. Like, hey, I definitely felt it. I got the distinction, because it's like whatever you love the most, like something just light and fluffy, you know, you just feel. For me, it was this upward feeling flowing upwards in my heart that I was like, oh, that's definitely a yes. It's kind of to check in with yourself. Is this good for me, or is this bad for me? And then he said that feeling of, oh my God, absolute like disgust, hurt, pain, suffering, which was the kittens and puppies in that horrible circumstance, to me felt like somebody yanking at my heart and like dragging it down through my chest. And that was one thing, as uncomfortable and pissed off at my business coach as I was, you know, for a couple weeks after that, I did get the analogy of just trying to check in with yourself, because I think that we're so bombarded by other people's opinions and emotions and all sorts of things out there that a lot of us aren't able to listen to our inner knowing and our inner selves, and we mix it up with other things. Does that make sense? And are you seriously disturbed by that? I hope not. I'm sorry if you are.
No, I'm not. I mean, of course I'm disturbed by it, because I happen to love puppies and kittens, and
you and me both.
It's a great way of going to the extremes to get a sense of what's heavy and what's light. And very similarly, and I don't often, you know, give people cues as to how they may perceive it, because really everyone's different. But very similarly, you know, for me, if something's light, there's a sense of space in my chest and kind of that, like you said, almost a lifting feeling going up from my chest through my head frequently. And a contractive sense for me very often is either clenching in my kind of solar plexus gut area or in my throat. Just know, for some people, you may not perceive it so much with your body. It may just be more of a sense of space and lightness around you, or a sense of heaviness, or almost like being under a dark cloud around you. There is no right or wrong way. I just wanted to make that distinction, because not everyone gets that physiological sense or perceiving with their body in the same way.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you bring up, because I know it's been a struggle. I was just talking to someone this weekend who said, you know, Jen, I love that you're into all this meditation, the spiritual stuff, and it really works for you. But this method or your method might not work for everybody, because like you said, it lands differently. Some people just have a gut knowing, some people it's not physiological, they just kind of have this intuition. So all of that stuff, I think, does factor in.
Definitely. And it's practice, you know, it's playing with it and starting to get familiar with what those signs and cues are for you. And you can play with it. If someone calls and invites you to something and you know you really want to go, you'll get that sense of, oh, yes. And we all know that feeling. Or you get invited to something and you really, really don't want to go for whatever reason. We all know the sense of what that is. That's a similar way of looking at heavy and light. And part of the key then is to start following the path of lightness. Sort of that's how the universe can give us the breadcrumbs to follow, is to follow the path of what's light for you, whether or not it makes cognitive sense. Like my, you know, universe-imposed sabbatical, it did not make any cognitive or career sense to stop seeing clients and to really take a break from it at all. And it was not a popular choice with my family. You know, I wasn't that far along in my career in the sense that, you know, having gone through graduate school and everything you go through and internships to get where you need to be, it was a very unpopular choice, yet I knew I needed to make it despite what anyone else thought and was willing to do it. I had to trust myself that there was something else available. Now,
I think,
you know,
that's
go ahead.
Great point. No, I was going to say, that's a great point. I just want to reiterate the point for anybody listening out there who might be thinking to themselves, gosh, should I take this job? Should I not? Am I bored? Should I leave? Should I take a sabbatical? Listening to your intuition would save you the heartache of 20 or 30 bad jobs that you're going to have over the course of your career, because we really do know. Like, I even remember one time in my gut, I just felt it was like gut-wrenchingly awful, and everybody pressured me to take the partnership job when I was 28. And I just did not connect. And I was like, I went against every grain of my body and I took the job for 3 months and left. And I just could have saved myself. Now, did I learn things from that 3 months there? Absolutely. But sometimes, is it worth the heartache of that 3 months, or was it valuable enough?
Exactly. And that's such good advice. When I had that sabbatical, I took quite a few, and like I said, it was just before the economy crashed. So traditional jobs were, you know, much harder to come by. And so I went a very untraditional route. I live in Los Angeles. I even did extra work in the, you know, film and TV industry. I did whatever I needed to do while I was figuring things out. And I took a few jobs in there that I knew it was going to be horrible, and it's still one of the worst 48 hours of my life.
Oh,
doing
no.
This work in like career-wise, you know, in marketing. It was just the most awful thing I ever did, and I knew when I took it, yet I took it from need. Like, I need
survival.
Extra income.
Yeah.
I had a cushion, right? Need and survival. And what I would say is, with these kinds of choices again, am I looking at this and taking this from a space of need or from a space of possibility? Mm. And, you know, did I really, really need it as much as I decided I did? No, I didn't, because I quit after 48 hours and it took another, you know, a few weeks for another gig to come along at that point, and I was just fine. So, I mean, looking at the motivating factors, I think when we're looking at making some kind of a change, whether it's a sabbatical, whether it's changing jobs or changing careers, is to really be willing to take an inventory and be honest with ourselves about what's going on. I mean, there were certain times with my job that I wanted to quit because I didn't want to have to go do public speaking. And it's still not my favorite thing to do. I don't want to get up in front of a bunch of people on a stage and talk, you know, ideally. It's not my number one thing I would pick. And at the time, I remember thinking, oh, my project director job at the counseling center, I thought, oh my God, I shouldn't have taken this. This is awful, because I had to start going and speaking to audiences about things that I can't even recall right now, but it wasn't something that I had tons of expertise in certainly talking about. And so are you looking at making a change to avoid something?
Mm.
Or is there something really going on that if you made some kind of a change, your life would be happier, your life would be more expansive? You know, because that's a very different...
That is a question. And I love that this whole conversation that we're having is related to questions. And I think the more that you get curious and the more that you bring wonder and curiosity to things, the more expansive we become. In fact, there was an article I was reading recently, something about NASA scientists were trying to solve a problem. and they couldn't figure out why their scientists were unable to come up with creative solutions. So they came up with this creativity test, kind of like a creativity intelligence quotient. And they went out and tested a bunch of five-year-olds, and the 4- and 5-year-olds were all, you know, scoring 98th percentile, as high as they possibly could on their creativity. Well, you jump forward 3 or 4 years, and then you get the 9- and 10-year-olds, and the statistics might be slightly off, and it dropped down to 60%. And then you get to young adults and so on and so forth until you get to maybe 5% of the population that's able to think creatively and solve problems. And I would argue that maybe a good portion of this relates to our inability or our social constraints around asking questions, because I think depending on culturally where you're from and what sort of family that you're grown up or you grow up in, that in some societies and cultures, questions can be looked down upon and can cause you to contract yourself rather than expand yourself, where creativity exists in the expansion.
Definitely. I mean, think about it. This wasn't so much the case in my house, but, you know, a lot of people I've talked to and friends, you know, how many people when they're little and they ask a ton of questions, I don't remember what age that is where we start. Well, why? What's this? What's this? What's this? It's enough. It's exasperating after 20 minutes, you know, when you got someone, well, why? And why do you do it this way? And what is this? And what is this? So often we are shut down, like stop asking questions. And we learn, and it's like happiness in the same way. You know, we laugh a lot and we're very exuberant. And then you're told you're too much or you're too loud, and to tone it down. And early on with things like this, I think we are trained to turn down that which makes us unique and different, and not always as a result of, you know, somebody being cruel or abusive. It's just the way we're taught. And certainly in school, you know, you've got to be quiet until it's time to ask questions, and then it's got to pertain to what's going on in the class. You know, there's so much, what's the word I'm looking for? Not differentiation. We're taught so much to distinguish what's right and wrong, and appropriate mm-hmm. and inappropriate in any given situation, that it takes away a lot of that freedom and creativity that we did have at 4 or 5. I mean, it's really interesting experiment they did, and it doesn't surprise me a bit.
Well, so I'll take it a step. Oh, go ahead.
Go. Oh no, it's inviting back that childlike wonder and curiosity. When you ask questions, you can't have a predetermined answer in mind. Like sometimes we know how we want things to turn out and we're asking a question, but we've already concluded how we want it to be. If we can go back to that childhood wonder of not knowing and being willing for any possibility to show up, that's where the creation and the creativity really kicks in.
I totally agree. And so that takes us back to our original point about boredom. So at what point should boredom cause you to leave a job? Or is it up to you to always look for the awe and the wonder in any job? How do you differentiate or distinguish between, okay, I'm actually bored and I'm not expanding, versus, okay, it's up to me and I could find wonder in this job if I looked for it?
Well, and those are the questions, I think. You know, so often some of the signs that get associated with boredom is some sense of heaviness and dread or procrastination. It may be, you know, facing the day ahead or facing certain tasks. And then hand in hand with that can be avoidance of a certain thing that you avoid. And you really want to look at, am I avoiding this just because it's something I don't particularly enjoy, but I could maybe tweak things a little bit and have it be more palatable to me? Or, you know, is this something that's become really incompatible with who you are? And there's got to be room for us as individuals to grow and change. I mean, we don't stay the same for most of us, at least, we don't stay the same for 30 years. So if you're in the same job, say for 10, 15 years, and in my case, it was frequently a lot less than that, and some boredom would set in, you've got to look at, who am I right now? And is this compatible with who I am and what I actually want my life to look like? I certainly wouldn't advocate throwing out the baby with the bathwater if it's something that can be redeemed with a few tweaks, or maybe seeing if you can add a role. Is there something else within your workplace that you would actually like to do? And could you request having some of that added to your job description or your job duties? And likewise, are there certain things that you really dread consistently because it's just not fun for you, or it's not really in your skill set, that you could then request having some of that delegated to someone else? I mean, are there, and it's not always possible with every job. And frequently, I think people get in that mindset of this is my job and this is the way it has to be, rather than looking at, wow, going to a supervisor or manager and looking at if there are ways to tweak it and play with it that may make it more fun for you.
Absolutely. In the recruiting world, you know, one thing we ask people is what is missing that would make a difference? So for example, if you're looking to leave position A for position B, you always want to be able to identify what is missing in position A. So A, you don't wind up in the same position that you were originally. And then to follow up with that, that you're also able to clearly communicate to an employer, because it's very scary to an employer. If you go in and you say, I want more of a challenge, that's a very ambiguous non-tangible thing that can scare them. But if you're able to clearly articulate what's missing that would make a difference and, you know, generate happiness and longevity, I think that's something that employers can get their heads around. And half the time, the job seekers I've worked with haven't even asked themselves that question, and it helps give them insight and self-awareness.
Definitely. Like I was saying, you know, taking that inventory and even taking into consideration things like work schedules. I know when I used to work for other people, there were a couple of positions I had where I didn't work your traditional 9 to 5 Monday through Friday work week. At one place, because my commute was really long, I was much happier working a 4-day, 40-hour work week and having longer days, but it took an entire, you know, it took about 3 hours of commute time off my schedule each week, which I loved. It made my life so much easier when that was made available to me. Or it could be, depending on, you know, the type of situation you work in, maybe going in an hour later and staying an hour later. Are there, you know, looking at, is it something with the schedule? Is it something with the tasks in particular? And like you were saying, is there anything challenging about this for me? And if you're bored, you know, is there anything challenging about this job for me? And if not, would having a bit of a challenge make this more interesting? And then if that's a yes, what would be challenging?
Perfect. Yeah, I think you've given our listeners so many wonderful tips today. So I do want to make sure that we leave them with a couple of salient points. What would you love everybody tuning in today to walk away from today's show with?
Okay, if I have to come up with a few, is one, to trust yourself. Trust that you know what will create the greatest possibility, and not letting yourself get overly confused by other people's points of view. Really asking questions of yourself. So then starting to ask questions would be point two. And it could be, hey, what's possible here that I've never considered before? And then just start noticing what shows up. When you ask questions of the universe like that, it is an ask and you shall receive universe. Things will show up. It's your job to pay attention to what shows up and to not judge yourself more than anything else. Self-judgment is one of the most destructive, well, judgment in general, is one of the most destructive forces. And when you can have allowance for where you are with things, and be kind to yourself and to your body while you're going through something that may change everything, like, the more ease you're going to have. I mean, those are my three points I'd say, you know, give anybody almost around any subject. When you really embrace those three things, trusting yourself, starting to ask these open-ended questions from curiosity, and not judging yourself, being kind to you, Like anything is possible. It truly is.
Oh, I love it, Gabrielle. That's brilliant. So tell everybody, in case somebody wants to hire you as a life coach, as a business mentor, where would people find information about you or your website?
Great. There are a couple places you can reach me. One, my main website is my name. It's Gabrielle, G-A-B-R-I-E-L-L-E, Vena, V as in Victor, E-N-A.com. And I'm also, my profile is available with all my Choice Business classes at accessjoyofbusiness.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for all of your wisdom that you shared. For anybody out there who's feeling frustrated or bored or thinking about a sabbatical or a transition, I think you gave some wonderful points for everybody to mull over on this Monday afternoon. So if you missed any portion of today's show, remember you can always find the full recording of the show immediately available for download after the show on the LA Talk Radio website under Get Yourself a Job on LA Talk Radio. And as well, later in the week, you will be able to find the show available in podcast form under iTunes on Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We invite you to subscribe, leave us any comments, and also you're welcome to interact with us on our Facebook Get Yourself the Job page. So thank you so much, Gabrielle, for joining us today. Thank you for tuning in and wishing everybody out there a wonderful week. We look forward to having you tune in next week. Take care.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.